Ade Due Dembele, give me the power, I beg of you! Ade Due Dembele, give me the power, I beg of you!
Hey, Dave. What you doing there, buddy?
What? Sorry. I was just practicing my voodoo chants. I didn't weird you out, did I?
Voodoo chants are pretty low on the list of weird shit I've seen you do around here, Dave. Don't sweat it.
Oh, thanks, Mike.
I'm probably going to regret asking this, but why are you practicing voodoo chants around a giant pentagram on the floor?
Remember when I said last week that the upcoming new year was going to be our most successful for the store and the podcast?
Yeah. What did you do?
Well, I went down to Bartertown last month to speak to a financial advisor about the money problems we've been having as of late.
Right. I remember you mentioned the guy had a weird name, something Philip?
Black Philip was the guy. Horns and hoofs kind of smelled funny. Anyway, I was talking to the guy, and it just so happens that he's also an event planner. And he tells me that the reason we've been hemorrhaging money and listeners is because we're not embracing our most successful promotion.
And that is?
The theme month.
Wait a minute. I thought you said our audience hated theme months. Didn't we get a bunch of hate mail about that last year?
No. Don't you remember that all turned out to be a hoax by some talking groundhog or something?
Oh, right, of course. A talking groundhog. How could I forget?
Anyway, Mr. Philip tells me if you want to bring in the money and the listeners, you have to go all in on your strengths, which means...
Oh, no.
This year, every month will be a theme month. It's oops, all theme months.
Well, it's at least kind of a catchy title. I'll give you that. Wait, this doesn't mean we're doing another Jesus month, are we? Tell me we're not watching Passion of the Christ again.
Don't worry, Mike. Mr. Philip told me that the Jesus freaks account for less than 2% of our audience now that the holy wars are over, so we have no need to cater to them.
Whew. That's at least one bullet dodged. So wait, what's with the pentagram and voodoo chants then?
Well, it probably has to do with the people who actually represent a sizable portion of our audience. Satan worshippers.
Oh, okay, that's cool. Actually, I'm a card-carrying member myself. Check it out.
Wow, third-degree master of fire and brimstone. Not bad, Mike.
Well, it was my major.
Well, this is great. I figured I'd have to twist your arm to get you on board with this whole theme year thing.
So what's the theme for this month going to be, Dave? You going to tell me or what?
Well, Mr. Philip advised me to start off the year strong and go for a surefire hit to hook the audience. This month, we'll be watching all devil-related movies with Satanuary.
Ah, nice. But you still haven't explained what the deal is with the boombox and the pentagram here.
Oh, right. Well, Mr. Philip told me in order to summon the devil and kick off Satanuary correctly, I'd have to perform a ritual voodoo chant to bless the promotion. The problem is, I've been at it for over an hour, and I still haven't summoned anything.
Well, maybe the problem here is your hardware. You're using some old boombox when you have the power of Chad and the store's Dolby Atmos sound system at your disposal.
Of course, what was I thinking? I shouldn't have gone with the retro approach. Summon the devil, you need the power of Dolby, baby! Chad, play this tape through the store sound system. I need all the wattage I could get! Oh yeah, that's more like it. Why don't you join in with me, Mike? Here are the lines. Ready?
Ready. Let's do some summoning.
Ade Due Dembele. Give us the power, we beg of you.
Heizu said he is no more. Long live Satanuary. All month long at Apocalypse Video, we're giving tribute to the Dark Lord by diving into the depths of Satan's most devilish and diabolical filmography. First up, we answer our summons and appear in court as Keanu Reeves and Al Pacino chew up the scenery in the fiendishly horny and over-the-top legal thriller, The Devil's Advocate.
A young attorney has the chance of a lifetime.
Bill Chadwick Waters.
We want you to come to New York. All expenses, first class, travel and lodging, you and your wife.
Oh, my God.
He will enter a place of wealth and ambition.
We've got 40 partners vested at the moment. In addition to our corporate clients, we're currently representing about 25 foreign countries. He's got you scheduled for 15 minutes, so make the most of it.
John Milton.
Kevin Lomax.
Well, what's that like? One day you're putting them away, next day you're setting them free.
Takes a little getting used to.
Pays better though, doesn't it?
Welcome to Babylon, Ma.
Speak of the devil.
A world of power and seduction.
Who's that with the senator?
Controlled by one man.
I swear he can hear us.
Hell, he can smell us.
He will make your dreams come true.
Want to come upstairs and...
No.
He will grant your fondest wish.
I'm just warming my hands on your talent.
You know what I see? I see the future of this law firm.
He knows your greatest fear.
Milton is into everything. Arms brokering, chemical weapons, toxic waste, money laundering for the Eastern Bloc. I mean, it goes on and on.
I don't like it here, Kevin.
And he knows the price of your soul.
Let's make a beef.
Who are you?
Oh, I have so many names.
Here on the ground with my nose in it since the whole thing began. God likes to watch. He's an absentee landlord.
Keanu Reeves.
He's always been there. I know that now.
Al Pacino.
As God sleeps late.
We will win.
It's my time now.
The Devil's Advocate.
So, Mike, once again, I'd like to thank you for staying on with the firm, a.k.a. the video store. I know it could be weird with all the demon imagery and the moving weird gray sculpture behind my desk in my office. I know it's a little off-putting, but I want to thank you for staying on board despite realizing that I may or may not be a devil.
Well, hey, that apartment you set me up with, Dave, sure is so nice.
Oh, but Mike, I thought you were going to go with the green. I like the green. Okay, we're talking about Devil's Advocate. I'm your host, Dave. I'm joined again by my fellow counselor, Mike.
Call me Dad.
Okay, so... We haven't seen this movie before, but we haven't watched this movie for the show before, but Bram Stoker's Dracula. When that movie came out, it was one of the things it was kind of controversial, but one of the things it was infamous for was Keanu's bad English accent. Now we get Keanu in here with this movie, Devil's Advocate, with a Southern accent. Thoughts?
Okay, so... One, do people from Florida have this type? Like, I know Florida's the South, but, like, I don't think of people from Florida having, like, the, well, hey, y'all, I'm from Florida. Like, that.
Neither do I.
So that's kind of weird. And besides that, dear God, it's like, what a choice. It's like half the time he does it, half the time he totally doesn't do it.
Well, is the I was thinking about that. Is the idea that he loses the accent when he finally, like, really gets deep into this law firm and slicking his hair back and wearing black suits?
No, that can't be it. That can't be it.
Or, okay, I didn't notice. Did he flip-flop even then?
I think he does. I think it's the whole movie. I feel like when he's getting emotional, he goes more into the southern drawl.
Hello, Max. What's wrong?
Lloyd, as your attorney, I'm advising you to keep the fuck away from me.
Ah! What are you talking about?
What, the kid, the outrage. You definitely had me fooled.
Hey, you're my lawyer. You're here to defend me.
You know what I'm thinking? I'm thinking, why don't we put you on the stand? You can jerk off for the judge.
No, she's lying.
Get the hell away from me.
Well, you know, even if he flip-flops, I kind of liked it. I liked his southern accent that he was doing. Maybe it wasn't great, but I don't know why.
I think it speaks to Keanu Reeves that I liked him in this movie.
Yes.
Despite the atrocious accent situation. I think this is worse. Like, the Bram Stoker's Dracula, he's at least trying the whole time. But this one,
I've seen many strange things already.
it feels like this one, they, like, filmed some scenes where he was trying it, and at some point during the filming of the movie, he just was like, up. Screw this. And
well, I don't know why. I kind of liked it. I forgot he did an accent in this movie. He's definitely doing like a southern thing, even though he's from Gainesville. Well, I mean, again, as you said,
elaborate, please, on like that you liked it. Like, do you think it was charming because it was bad? Or like, were you like, wow, this guy feels like he's from the South?
No, I didn't feel like that. It was just like charmingly silly, I guess, is the way I would describe it. Like, yeah. I can only assume he's putting on this voice, and I'm wondering if this was sort of in the script, is because I wonder if that's supposed to kind of speak to his naivete or the fact that he's like, oh,
everyone knows southern accent means dumb. And also,
it separates him from the New York lawyers who are like, oh, this country boy coming in, your hotshot country boy trial lawyer from Gainesville.
Right. With his mom, who's straight out of like 1905 Central Casting.
She looked like she came out of like the Dust Bowl or something.
Yes. She was from Grapes of Wrath.
She looks like Mama Jode. But yeah, I don't know. I find it charmingly silly. Again, I think what they were going for is like,
are we talking about, David, just as a reminder, are we talking about the accent or the movie? Because charmingly...
The accent. The accent. The movie itself is
charmingly
like...
silly is how I might describe the movie as well.
I would say it's charmingly horny. No, this movie is hornier than I remembered it being. This is a very pulpy movie.
So have you seen this before?
I have seen this before. This used to play on TNT all
the time.
That's
what I was going to say this is a movie that I saw like Ryan style, where I've probably seen like half the movie on TV before, like a million times. But probably because it was edited out, I didn't realize about the horny stuff. I feel like I had all like, I mean, it's been years, but back in the day when I did see it on like TNT or whatever, it was most of the court stuff, like the courtroom, scenes.
Yeah. Well, it's funny too. Like, this is a long movie. This is like 2 hours and 20 something minutes. I didn't realize how long it was, which is perfect for TV. Cause they're like, oh, perfect. We can put this on like a 3.5-4 hour time slot, fill up some time.
Right.
So I get why this played on TNT a lot. It's got, you know, it's Pacino and Reeves at the height of their game. And I got to say, so we talked about Reeves and his southern accent.
Is this the height of Pacino's game?
I mean, well.
97.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe not Pacino.
He's in the game. He's still in the game.
You know what I'd say?
He hasn't Dunkachino'd yet.
He hasn't Dunkachino'd yet. I would say this is one of his blips where he peaks for a second and he does a crazy roll. Because this is like pure unfiltered Pacino here.
Underestimated from day one. You'd never think I was a master of the universe now, would you? That's your only weakness, as far as I can see.
What's that?
It's the look. That Florida stud thing. What is that?
Excuse me, ma'am. Did I leave my boots under your bed?
Never worked a jury, didn't have a woman.
Yeah, but you know what you're missing? You're missing what I have. There's this beautiful girl just fucked me 40 ways from Sunday. We're done. She's walking to the bathroom. She's trying to walk.
She turns. She looks. It's me. Not the Trojan army, just fucked her. Little old me. She gets this look on her face, like, how the hell did that happen? I'm the hand of Mona Lisa's skirt. I'm a surprise, Kevin. They don't see me coming. That's what you're missing. Where's the chicken?
What?
But he is going ham in this movie, and I am all here for it. And especially, you get the sense that not only the actors, but the characters in this world are also like, damn, this guy is freaking eating this, chewing the scenery, man. You know what I mean? Like, it's the characters, too, that are like, oh, he's just like that.
Yeah.
He's just kind of evil that way, and we kind of love him for it.
Yeah, but it is. It is like he's the crazy boss for a while.
Yes. That doesn't have a home. They say he basically lives in this one giant penthouse room. It's not like a series of rooms. It's a giant room with like this gigantic white, what is it, like William Blake, like kind of style? Is that right?
It's like a sculpture. Are you talking about the sculpture? It's like a Baroque.
Yeah
Blake adjacent. It is. I think it's just fair to say it's an evil room.
It's an evil room. There's
one would describe it as a lair.
It's a lair, and he's got this giant fireplace on one side. It's one of those evil villain rooms where there's a lot of space. You know,
one of my favorite interactions in the movie is when Keanu Reeves first goes there, and he's like, "Where's the bed?" And they're like, "He doesn't sleep." And then Keanu's like, "Where does he fuck?"
Wherever.
Yeah. And then he enters wherever I want.
Well, it's like, I always laugh at villain lairs like this that are so wide open. Like, you see, like, a couple chairs that are so far apart from each other. I'm just like, imagine talking to somebody in this room. Like, you're yelling across the room.
You know? Yeah, I mean, it looks great in pictures, Dave, but it's not functional.
It's not functional. No. It's like to bring, like, a client in and, like, awe them with its evilness.
So, what new evil do you have planned for today?
Oh my god, we'll get more into him as we go, but to jump right into Devil's Advocate, we begin. I love how the credits literally begin on the nose with fire. Immediately, like,
we're in hell.
We're in hell.
The devil.
Now, we open in Gainesville, Florida, in a trial, and I don't remember her name, but she's been in a ton of movies. I think she was the lead in Welcome to the Dollhouse, if you've ever seen that movie.
The girl?
Yeah. She's on the witness stand, and she's basically saying she was, like, molested by this teacher.
This is a rough opening.
It's a rough opening. And basically, she's telling about what happened, and Keanu Reeves looks over. He's defending the guy who's being charged with this crime. And the guy just starts touching himself. He, like, puts his hand on his crotch and starts rubbing while she's retelling the tale of what he did to her. And Keanu Reeves sees this, and immediately after she's done, he's like, can we take 5 minutes, Judge, Your Honor?
I'm having
a crisis of faith moment here.
Yeah, I need to go stare in the mirror for 2 hours and 20 minutes and live a fable.
Yeah, he goes into the bathroom and he has this moment. It's basically, it's his crossroads moment. Like, do I, like, you know, I know this guy's
guilty. He's
basically
like, okay, well, I know the guy did it. Like, I know I'm now defending a guilty man who's guilty of, like, the
one of the most heinous crimes you could do.
Imagine, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really where the movie begins, right? That's the movie, right? He looks in the mirror. That's the framing device.
And this reporter's in there. It's like, oh, it looks like you're going to lose your first case, counselor. Oh, you've been on a run, but you can't win them all. And walks out the door. And this kind of spurs Keanu Reeves.
One of my favorite tropes is movies like legal dramas or businessy dramas, is where there's all the kind of like shop talk in bathrooms.
Yes.
I feel like that's a really funny trope that does not, like, that would be insane if that happened in real life. If, like,
just having full on conversations while you're taking a shit.
Like business conversations in a public bathroom.
Well, it's a power move. It's what the rich and wealthy do.
Is it? It probably is. I don't know. I always enjoy it when I see that.
Well, he seems to take this thing like can't win them all as a challenge. Like, well, fuck you. This guy's guilty of sin, but I'm gonna get him off anyway. Not
because the thing he didn't say too is this is such a another movie trope. But the courtroom is packed with the public, and they are like in it. Like, you know, at any little, she's like, as the victim's telling her story, they're like, oh no. So yeah, Keanu's going out there, and it's like, not only is it like he's like, the guy did it now, mm-hmm. and how do I, my crisis of faith, but also he's like, well, they're going to convict him, right? He's guilty as sin. There's no way out, even if he wanted there to be a way out, unless.
Well, he makes a decision. He's like, I'm not going to lose this case. And basically, what does he do? And I had a question, because you have some legal knowledge. Explain how discovery works. You can't just say, I got some new evidence, Your Honor. Aha! Because he busts out this thing like, sir, I think there are ways
to like introduce new evidence, but I think the problem, I mean, if I want to like get into, it doesn't matter, but if I were to get into like the nitpicky of like how this would work, that what he produced, what he showed, probably was covered in some prior request. Like they probably, someone made a request, I'm sure, for like all of her school records or something like that. And if this wasn't provided, you can't be like, oops, we have it. And I mean, you could maybe you'd probably have to like, what would probably happen is there, once he did that, there probably would, all right, sidebar, we're going to have like another day of hashing out arguments about, can we admit this or not?
Well, does the judge say something like, sir, I got to remind you about the rules of discovery or something like that? You're pushing it.
It's the classic movie thing of like, I'll let this one slide, counselor.
I'll let it slide. You can answer the question. Did you call him a huge hog beast? Yes or no?
Yeah, and his approach of like, how I'm going to win this case is just like insulting the victim, basically. Like being like, 12-year-old girl, isn't it true you are a slut? Like it's like crazy, like disgusting. But it's like the audience is basically, you know, again, the crowd is like, she called the teacher a huge hog beast. Oh,
I'm sorry, Barbara, I was wrong. It's huge hog beast. This is your handwriting, isn't it?
Yes.
You wrote this in Mr. Getty's class.
It's a joke.
He's a huge hog beast. He probably eats 1,000 pancakes for breakfast.
Yeah, so basically, like, he gets out that, like, the kid was, like, doing, like, you know, some, like, 7 minutes in heaven type party, and that's when this came out, so, like, isn't it so late, you know, were you just confused about the crazy, like, premarital sex you're having?
Or, basically.
Yeah, and, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know how I feel about this scene, honestly, because the rest of the movie's so fun, and this is, like, it's pretty... I mean, I guess it's like sets the tone of the movie, but it's pretty, it's like just the little girl crying there. It's a little much, I feel like,
it's a choice because like most of the time you don't see like this is the only time really that you see like the victim you know, alive and in the thing. Like most of the time, this whole movie is basically just John Milton as Al Pacino, the devil, like putting Keanu Reeves in all these situations where he has to willfully decide, like, yeah, I'm going to represent these people I know are guilty of sin.
Right.
It's like this law firm that takes him on in New York is basically a law firm that exclusively protects guilty people, essentially.
Well, and just the evil. Like, it's so funny when they, like, I mean, it kind of unravels as you learn more about the law firm. But it is funny in the very beginning, like, as they're introducing the law firm, just getting the hints of, like, oh. Like, because they say, like, yeah, we have a international department. So we work in Russia, West Africa, the Middle East, North Korea. It's like, wait, why? Do you have, like, an operation in, like, England or like
well, also
Canada?
It's funny as they're touring him. So basically, to go back to the beginning, he wins the case, and he's like, "Yeah, winning streak secure." And he gets approached by this guy later.
At a party where they're just doing shots, and I want to shout out. This is the first part where we're introduced to his wife, Charlize Theron, and we see an odd character choice Keanu Reeves, or I don't know if he made this choice, but an odd thing about his character, he is very bitey with his wife.
When I say this literally, he eats her ass cheek. He eats it.
Yes, that is like they're on the dance floor at this bar and he's dancing, he like bends down and just takes a if I saw that, wild. Like, that's unhinged.
Well, and it's the first of many moments of public, like, sex, essentially, in this movie.
Yeah. So he does that, and he stands up, and then he's just like, I have to piss.
Yes.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. It's really weird.
And there's a moment later when he's, like, with her in like, the park in New York, and he, like, bites her earlobe and, like, really pulls it. Like, to the point where I'm like, is that, a special effect?
There's a part in Florida when he's saying bye to his mom. He bites her ear. He bites his wife's ear, and then spits out the earring, like a Looney Tunes spitting out, like swallowing a fish whole, and then spitting out the bones. Yeah, he spits it out, and he like hands it to her, and she's like, like.
Well, would you expect any less from who his father is, which we'll get into later?
Yeah, daddy issues.
The devil is bitey. but anyway, he gets approached by this guy.
Yeah. Yeah, he's drunk as a skunk at the bar and approached by a guy who's like,
his accent is fluctuating wildly at this point.
Yeah, but he's basically just like, you know, hey, you're the best. We've been watching you. Like, do you want to fly to New York City, all expenses paid, first class all the way, and have a paycheck for an amount that the movie doesn't want to say because we don't know what a lot of money will be like.
It's a good cover your ass moment.
Yeah, that's another movie trope of like, we won't say what the big sum of money is because
you're going to see is his face.
Yeah. 20 years from now, when people are watching the movie, they can imagine what a large amount of money will be, and it still works, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And he gets this huge apartment, and he gets brought into the law firm. And what I like about this, so you mentioned, like, he's got, before we're introduced to Al Pacino's character, he's being toured through the offices of this branch in New York. And they have, like, but I can only describe as like barren evil architecture. Like, it's like concrete walls with like holes in them. Like, it's very weird looking.
Yeah.
It's not inviting.
No. No, and one thing the views are, like, nice, I guess, but...
One thing I noticed that the movie does, like, it starts in Gainesville. It's very colorful and bright and sunny. And then the moment it shifts to New York, everything becomes, like, drab and just very, you know, like, more muted, which I kind of thought was a cool contrast.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I didn't really think about that.
Like, he's literally going into hell. Well, as his mom describes, Babylon.
Yeah.
But yeah, he gets toured around. He finally gets introduced to Al Pacino, and they immediately put him on a case. Or no, they do jury selection, which is another, like, his first test. Like, I want you to weed out a jury, pick a jury, and see if you can, like, you know, win this case. And this was another question I had for you. So we talked about discovery. Let's talk about jury selection.
Let's.
You raised your eyebrows. You can't see it, folks, but Mike just, like, evilly raised his eyebrows.
I feel like this is the most, like, accurate part of the movie is
okay.
I mean, we don't see a lot of it, but I would just say, like, I think it is very important if you have a jury trial to select a jury that's gonna work for you. But I think the way that he's picking it is kind of how people do, like, because so much of it is like gut, you know, like you just kind of
look at his shoes. He makes his own shoes, or what does he say?
Yeah, I think they're just trying to weed out like rich people, maybe. Or
look at her. See, she wants. She's an addictive. She wants revenge on somebody. She's gonna do it here. Or what am I saying? She's gonna do it here. Yeah.
I think the only thing I was confused about is, like, I don't really know exactly what was going on with that case and why why these things would be problems for these jurors.
Yeah, they don't explain that.
Why is it a problem for this one guy? Because they're like, you think this? They're basically like, you think this black guy's a thug, but he's actually, like, rich and successful. Mm. And I'm like, why? I was wondering, why is it a problem for him to be on the jury if he's, like, rich and successful? Like, I don't understand what's... I don't know. I think they set that up very well of, like, why it would matter for that specific case.
And he ends up winning. We don't really know what the case is, but you know that they pick his jury and then he wins. Like,
I think that's a missed opportunity, because I think the whole jury selection scene would have been more fun if we knew what he was looking for, you know, or what the angle would have been. Because yeah. it is like he's the point of it is he seems like a badass. Like he's yeah. picking differently than the more experienced co-counsel, and he's right. But so it's like, ooh, this guy's like a savant. He's so good. But we don't really doesn't do a great job
like
showing us.
I feel like the problem is like it doesn't there's no part of this jury selection scene that is like a test of him willfully doing something that he knows is bad. Like all the other tests sure. that he does are like you're willfully choosing like the bad side to defend who yeah. you know are guilty. With this one it's literally just like yeah, he's good. But yeah. it's like we already knew he was good. Yeah. He just got off the guy that was clearly guilty, you know? So it's like it's kind
of there's a little bit of this movie that's like 90s kind of I think of as a 90s like morality thing of like mm-hmm. oh, New York is bad, or like defense
lawyers
attorneys
are bad.
Well, and specifically I feel like it was a 90s thing of like defense attorneys are bad specifically mm-hmm. like, and they're all rich.
Well, this movie, looking in the trivia, this movie was kind of the book came out that it's based on came out in 1990. There was some apparently at some point Joel Schumacher was attached to direct. That would have been fun with Brad Pitt in the Keanu Reeves role, but apparently they couldn't find someone to play the devil that they were satisfied with, so it kind of languished.
I'm glad
apparently
they got Al Pacino.
What got this movie going again was the OJ trial. They're like, ooh, so maybe there'll be some sudden interest in something.
Well,
this.
I mean, that's a famous example probably of like a defense attorney who a lot of people thought is like kind of a rich. But it's funny is like there's a bit too where he talks about Keanu Reeves talks about he used to be a prosecutor, but then he went to the defense, and Al Pacino's like, more money in that, isn't there? And like, no, there's definitely not. Like, there's not really like, I mean, most criminal defendants are public defenders who make nothing and work a lot. Like, it's a thankless job.
Well, to be fair, they're defending super rich people.
Right, right. But that is like, that is such a niche thing. Like the world of like, I am a defense attorney for the rich. There is a lot of money in that, but there's probably like, I mean, I'm exaggerating a bit, but there's like 10 people who do that, you know, that kind of work. Like, it's not a...
Well, he says at the end, like, there's like 10,000 or 10,000 kids in law school or whatever. What does he say at the end? Something like that?
Yeah, he's like, this is again, like, lawyers are a bad thing, where it's like, there's more, there's so many lawyers now. There's more law students than lawyers. Like, by the end of this movie, there's an implication that Satan has infiltrated the entire legal system, and like, basically all lawyers are going to be working directly for Satan.
They're my army of lawyers. Yeah. Keanu, I'm ready for the 21st century.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, but this movie does get insane by the end of it.
Yes.
Like,
we get fucking face morphing, like demon face morphing.
Oh, yeah. We get lots of morphing, lots of things morph.
Lots of things morph. And like, so basically this, so yeah, it's kind of funny. Like we said, this is a long movie. It's like, it's almost 2.5 hours long, but really the story is fairly simple. It's basically just test after test of, we're going to see if you got free will. We're going to see if you are willfully going to choose the wrong path. And then meanwhile, at the same time, we're going to drive your wife insane.
Yeah. And it's like, in the meantime, also your wife is living through Rosemary's Baby. Like,
yes.
She has a different movie going on.
Yeah, she's the one that kind of first experiences the face morphing. She basically like she buddies up with like the wives of a couple of the other lawyers.
Well, because I mean, we should establish like they're put up in this apartment that is it's basically a building that is owned by Al Pacino. He lives on the penthouse, and all the other like partners or higher ups in this law firm live on this house. So the wives of all the, because it's all men who work there, I think, and all the wives are unemployed and just like getting drunk and hanging out and kind
of
like.
Well, she has one of them has that line where it's just like,
take a look around, honey. Look, you got three choices, the Holy Trinity. You can work. You can play. Or you can breed.
You can work, play, or breed. Like, oh, God.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Put it like that.
Yeah, and she loves it, too.
Yeah, they all love it. I mean, honestly, I would love it. I would be... Put me
well,
up in that house.
Well, you're staying here, right? You're staying employed by Apocalypse Video.
And yeah, you know, the movie, basically Charlize Theron's character unravels. And it's really funny when this movie is trying to make Charlize Theron look like dumpy. Like they're trying.
I know, like she's not like one of the like most attractive women ever.
Right, right. Like, yeah, because of course, like one of the things that happens, Keanu Reeves is like, Al Pacino makes Charlize Theron's character like look less attractive. Like tells her to like, hey, your hair looks too pretty. Like cut it and like, you know, to get this
perm
like
doesn't suit you.
Yeah, she has like this really wild, fun hairstyle, and Al Pacino
blonde.
Makes her. Yeah, it makes her cut it and like dye it back to like a muted color. So she just looks like, you know, dumpy, you know, as dumpy as Charlize Theron can possibly look.
Honestly, I was like, I didn't realize that that's what the movie was going for. And I'm just, because right. At one point, Keanu Reeves says, this radical hair change. I'm like, she still looks amazingly right. Hot. What are you talking about?
She looks like Charlize Theron in 1997, you know?
I know. It was crazy. But eventually, so he starts hanging out more with Al Pacino. He stays out late. He leaves her at a party, which is a big no-no. He leaves her alone for like 3 hours. She has no one to talk to except these rich assholes. Like at one point, even someone, there's like a conversation, like I knew somehow it was going to come up. It's New York. It's the late 90s. But at some point, his name gets brought up. Like, oh, he was supposed to be here. I won't say it.
Donald Trump. Well, yeah. The guy they're defending, one of the guys they defend is like definitely a stand. Craig T. Nelson's character is.
Oh yeah, well his house is so Trump coded.
His whole thing is he's Trump coded because he's a real estate. It's definitely meant to be because he's a piece of shit. He's like a real estate developer with tons of affairs who's like brash. Yeah. They interview him in his house and it's all gold, everything. Like it looks like
tacky looking.
I wouldn't
gold.
Be shocked if that's like that was Trump's house they filmed in or something. Like yeah. But yeah, it's 100% a stand in for Trump. I mean, why? Yeah, it's just funny. Like we for media in so long, he was such a stand in for like piece of shit evil guy. Like,
well, it's funny, but yeah, like.
But, oh yeah, and so Craig T. Nelson, like the Trump character, he's having affairs with his wife, and he like kills his wife and like house sitter or something like in it, you know, because she found out about the affair, which is, you know, very Trump.
And there's like a prenup or something that they had signed, right?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's funny, too, you mentioned Trump. Like, I'm surprised he wasn't just in this movie as himself, because there's a moment when Al Pacino takes Keanu Reeves to a boxing match, and Don King, as himself, walks down and greets the devil like, hey, buddy! And I'm just like, it really goes to show how openly, like, evil a lot of these people, these figures were at the time. They're like, yeah, I'm evil and I love it. You know what I mean? It's a movie that it's very clear about what it's doing, and it's like, would you mind Don King just being yourself and being buddies with the devil? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, would you mind be literally palling around with Satan?
It's freaking crazy. But as we mentioned, crazy stuff starts happening. So in the Rosemary's Baby portion of the movie, Charlize Theron is hanging out with like the other wives, and there's a scene, again, we mentioned like public like sex stuff. Like there's a scene when they're in a dressing room and one of the other women like literally just takes her top off. Like, what do you think of my new boobs? You like them? And Charlize Theron just takes a beat like, yeah, they're fine. And she's like, go ahead, touch them, they're firm, right?
No, Dave, she's weirder about it. She takes her top off and she's like,
Dr. Robert, I'm telling you, he's the miracle man. You've seen my new tits. I mean, who does it better than that?
It's not my tits I'm worried about.
Not too big. Perfect. Real or not? They look real.
They must be real.
Feel them.
Oh, no, it's okay, really.
Go ahead.
No.
That's the ultimate test.
Come on.
Feel real?
Yes, absolutely real.
Dr. Robert.
And this is where her face
it's
like,
kind of
morphs
funny.
Into a demon.
It's
for
kind
a
of
second.
A funny, yeah. And then, yeah, that's when Charlize Theron first sees that these are demons.
She freaks out. And there's like a, and not only that, her face morphs, but also there's a scene where like hands are like inside this woman's body, and they like move around like under her skin. It's like really weird.
They're also doing a thing that I have only seen in movies. They're at a clothing store and they're buying like really high-end clothes. And I guess it's like so high-end that as they're just like sitting there while the person brings them clothes and is also bringing them like a unlimited wine while they're like sitting there. That is, have you ever bought clothes in a place where like this is the how it works? Like you're sitting there and someone's waiting on you and bringing you wine.
I mean, they usually do that at Kmart all the time. There's a wine service.
The blue light special.
Yeah. No, of course not. There's just a changing room and there's someone at the front like, door 4 is open. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I'm not part of that world.
I think if I was in that situation, I think I'd have, like, I need to donate to charity or something. Like, this is...
Well, you mentioned they have wine. This is kind of goes into like the thing where, you know, they gaslight her like, so honey, you told me you had been drinking a little bit, you had had some wine, you know, they gaslight her and like, you know, you didn't see this, this isn't happening. And again, what's with this radical hair change?
Yeah.
So Rosemary's Baby is going on with Charlize Theron. Meanwhile, Keanu Reeves just keeps taking on increasingly more evil clients. We got Delroy Lindo. I forgot he was in this.
And busy. Like, Al Pacino's is part of the game is to, like, separate the two of them.
Yes.
Like, he's, like, a big thing they say is, like, he's, like, never home. He's barely there. Charlize Theron's, like, barely seeing her. And so Charlize Theron is getting more and more isolated and alone. Like, there's this... It comes back later, but there's a point where she kind of drops, like, she's, like, not even talking to anybody. Like, she's just sitting there alone. But,
and you know the solution to that?
Let's have a baby.
It's like, really? Okay, that'll fix everything.
Yeah, who are you saying we get?
Oh, yeah, Delroy Lindo. I forgot he was in this.
Who is that?
Yeah, you remember he was the guy in the core that makes, like, the experimental, like, drill thing? I mentioned it because we watched it on the show. He's also in Broken Arrow. He's like an army guy. What else is he?
Is he the Haitian guy?
Yes.
Okay. Who
they have the video of. He's like killing that goat or whatever in like this ritual or something like that.
It's so funny, that video.
Yeah. And of course, Keanu is just like, and he has to meet him like in
this
subterranean.
It's just like they play this video. It's like, who's your next client? Let's play a video of like, it looks like something like in the 80s or 90s during the satanic panic that they would have like the signs to look out for occultism. It's just like this guy like harrowing, the camera's all shaky and the guy's like just like slaughtering like an animal with candles and like pentagrams all around and like there's like screaming. It's like, defend that.
And he does. He's just like, well, in this, and he basically, she's like, so he can do whatever he wants to do with that goat. With his, he's covered by religious freedoms, blah, blah, blah. And like Don King, as soon as he gets him off, like the Al Pacino walks out in the outer courtyard of the courtroom. He's like, buddy, hey, it's me. And Don Riddle's like, hey, it's my friend. You know what I mean? Like, he's like, everyone, all these evil people are friends with them. They know him.
This is also the first time we get, is this the first supernatural thing that happens with, the devil stuff? Cause Philippe does when Keanu goes to visit Philippe, his client, the Haitian guy, he's like, I think he's Haitian. He's like underground in his creepy basement with candles everywhere.
In his lair.
And Keanu's like, I want to talk to you about the case or whatever. And Philippe is like, don't worry about it. We're good. Let me grab a tongue and nail some nails into this like cow tongue. And you're good now. You're not going to have to worry. And then fast forward to the trial. Prosecutor he's like trying to object where Keanu Reeves is going on a roll, but he keeps coughing. It's like, Your Honor.
Your Honor. The city timed this police action to catch my client exercising his constitutionally protected right to religious freedom.
This is a law protecting kosher butchering.
Exactly, Your Honor. And I'd like to move at this time for a verdict of dismissal.
I happen to know a little bit about kashrut law, Mr. Lomax.
I'm aware of that, Your Honor. That's why I feel confident in requesting a dismissal.
Mr. Murto?
You're right.
Mr. Murto. For God's sake, man.
It was shocking that the judge wasn't like, let's take 5 minutes.
Right.
You know
right,
what I mean?
Right. Like,
but
counselor,
no, the judge is like, get your shit together, prosecutor.
Yeah, that would totally be like, counselor, let's take a 15-minute recess. You know, mm-hmm. take care. Yeah, it's like, counselor, get your shit together. Stop coughing. Jesus.
Yeah,
God.
It's really, they're all pissed at this guy. They're like,
it's part of the magic. It's part of the satanic magic. Is the judge is also under the spell, you know.
And the next case is essentially Craig T. Nelson. It basically is Donald Trump. He, as you said, he killed his wife and housemaid, and he's guilty as sin. And they try to get it. So he's like, oh, well, he couldn't have been there because he was cheating on his wife. But then you find out that's all a lie. There was no mistress he was cheating with. And it's all, it's kind of another thing where he's just like, you set me up, you know? But again, like, he talks to Al Pacino and he's
wait,
just like,
okay, break this out for me though, because I think this went over my head. So that was that not his mistress? Like, was he just wasn't at that time having sex with her?
Yeah, they make it seem like he was sleeping with this his mistress, who I forget her role, but he was sleeping with this woman, so he couldn't have killed his wife and housemaid because he was having an affair over here.
Right.
But it turns out that was not the case. She is lying
right.
so that right. he can use her as an alibi. And Keanu finds this out. He's like, I know she's lying, but
oh, because she wasn't sure if he was circumcised.
Yes. Yes. So basically, and correct, and it's funny too, like the lengths
but if they
go
weren't,
to.
If they weren't having sex, why would he have killed his wife? Because I thought he killed his wife because of the prenup and the.
Well, I think she probably found out he was sleeping around, and she left
just,
him.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But it really goes like how far they went, because like Craig T. Nelson makes this big show, because initially like Keanu's defense is just like when he sets up is like, I'm not going to take a lot of time like my prosecutor friend here. I'm just going to tell you straight. I don't like
I
this
love
guy.
That. I love that. I thought that was like really effective opening statement type stuff.
He's
yeah.
just like, yeah, we know he's this guy sucks. He's a piece
well,
of
they
shit.
Said,
but
they set the scene up so well because you don't see really what the prosecutor said. You just kind of see him finish and he sits down.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
the judge is like, all right, we can either have the remaining opening statement or break for lunch. And you can tell like the vibe is like, please, let's break for lunch.
Yeah.
And Keanu's like, I'll speak, but I'll be brief. And everyone, it's like the first scene again, where you have this great gallery, you know, sound effects mm-hmm. of just like, oh, everyone's all like, oh man.
Like, but he is Keanu, super brief.
Yeah. And Keanu starts, he's like, I know you all want to go to lunch. Like that's such a funny way to like start like the opening statement for the murder yeah. trial. Like I know lunch is on your mind. Who amongst us? We all know there's a Jersey Mike's down the street. It's going to be long lines anyway. You want to get in there. And yeah, but yeah, he's just like, he does the classic thing of like, my client is a piece of shit.
but is that enough to convict him of murder?
Right. Yeah. It's good. It's like, hey, is yeah. this a popularity contest or a murder trial? Like, you know, yeah. I don't like my client.
But it goes to show how like into this lie Craig T. Nelson is, because he afterwards makes this big show. He shoves Keanu against like a wall.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you trying to do? What the hell was that? You're crucifying me.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, they already think you're guilty. You know what yeah. I mean? So
yeah, he does the thing where he's like, because if you're having sex with that mistress, you're not murdering your wife. And
yeah, he's and like, oh, that's brilliant. Why like, didn't you just tell me? Oh. But again, it speaks to like how into this lie they are, because Craig T. Nelson is basically putting on a show of anger here. He knows it's a lie.
Yeah.
So and because he finds out later.
Well, he's not putting on a show of anger because he is like upset.
Well, I guess he's upset, but like ultimately he knows that like that he wasn't with his wife at that point. So you know what I mean? Or he wasn't with that.
But if they can convince him he was, you know.
Yeah,
that's smart.
But in any event, he ultimately gets off. Keanu is just like, I don't want to lose. You know, if I can get past this case, I can spend more time with Charlize Theron or whatever. But
well,
a little late for that.
Pacino is like giving him so many outs. Pacino is like, hey, I'm going to take you off. Pacino like straight up says, it doesn't even like give him a choice. Like straight up says, like, I'm taking you off this case because you need to be with your wife. And Keanu's like, fuck no, you're not. I'm staying on this case.
Yeah. Free will. Yeah. As he's like, free will. Hey, I gave you all the chances, man. I was going to take you all. Mike's doing the eyebrow thing, raise again, audience. You can't see it, but I'm doing it too because I'm evil.
You know, we haven't mentioned about Pacino's character that is established by now that I love is he speaks like every language.
Yes, I thought that was fun. We get a supernatural scene when I like to be among the people, the masses. I'm a humanist. And they're riding the subway, and like they get like harassed by these two tough guys on the subway. And he just looks at the guys like, "Hey, your wife's sleeping with that guy. You should go. Yo, you're gonna pull a knife on us. You could stick it in him. That's where it belongs."
Yeah, except he's saying all this in Spanish, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's basically like, "Oh, you want to stab us now? But your friend, like Chad, is up there. He's actually at home banging your wife right now. I bet you didn't know that. But if you hurry up, you might still have time.
There's a train coming the opposite direction. You can catch it and go home now."
Yeah.
"You can thank me later."
And it seems to strike, you know, I'm sure that's real. This seems like devil powers. Like, I don't think he's making that up. There's another scene where he speaks like Cantonese to some guy to talk about like a chicken that plays checkers or whatever. Yeah. Tic-tac-toe chicken. So I think we see him speak Russian, Cantonese, and Spanish. And I'm wondering, like, did Pacino, like, phonetically learn his dialogue for these?
I'm not sure. Who knows? Maybe he's multilingual, but I would assume probably just, you know, they taught him those lines. Yeah. It did sound authentic. Like, especially when he's speaking Spanish to that guy. He seemed to have it down. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it worked. It could have been like clunkier than it was.
Well, it goes, I like that they
Pacino,
do this because
Al Pacino may be a good actor.
You know what? You might be right. He's had his moments, but I think it's a smart thing that they do because it's basically just like he knows all, he speaks all languages, he can do, you know what I mean? He can do whatever. It's basically like his reach extends everywhere.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And to get kind of jump to the kind of towards the end a little bit. So as I said, like they keep presenting him with these options where he has to freely choose. I'm going to represent these people I know are clearly guilty. It eventually culminates with Craig T. Nelson. He gets him off. And eventually it gets to a point where Charlize Theron just like literally goes crazy. She stabs herself in the throat with a piece of broken glass.
Well, she's been committed by this point. Like they commit. Why do they commit her? What does she do that's like so crazy?
Well, she gets raped off screen by Al Pacino.
By Al Pacino. And it's the whole. Yeah. Because she's like when she tells Keanu that it happened, it was Keanu's like, "When did it happen?" And she was like, "This afternoon." And Keanu's like, "You're crazy, lady.
He was with me.
Al Pacino was with me all afternoon, and surely he's not the devil and can be two places at once. He's a human being, so this doesn't make any sense. You must be crazy." And they're like, "We're sorry, we're gonna have to commit you." And she's committed, and like it's so funny too. Again, like another trope we get in this very tropey movie is like the person who's been committed all of a sudden is so much crazier that like, like she's presenting, you know,
like she's almost comatose,
right? Which is like, okay, like I don't know if this is quite how she would go. Like I get she's losing her marbles, but like it's straight up.
I feel like she would just be more scared and hectic, but and less comatose.
And I feel like she would be more desperate to seem normal.
Yeah. Yeah, like, exactly. I'm not crazy. This fucking happened.
Like Keanu, you fucking take a day off work and chill out for a second. You're not seeing what I'm seeing, you know? But instead she's like, "Yeah!" You know?
So she literally stabs herself in the throat. She dies. Keanu's got like blood on his collar. He goes, he leaves out the door.
This is the moment where the movie like positive goes off the rails. Like weird now.
In a fun way.
Yeah, this is, we're full. I clocked it. I paused it because I had to go to the bathroom and I was like, this is a perfect bathroom break because it just, this is where the mask comes off. He walks out of the institution, you know, saw his wife die in front of him and he's like bloody. And one of the law firm partners is there and just like says to him, like, "He can make you feel bliss all the time. You never have to feel sad again.
You can put this behind you."
Yeah. That's what's like, okay, we're going full. Like it's the devil.
Well, and he like turns and like the city is empty.
Yeah,
he's essentially in like not in Times Square, but like in the streets.
He's
of
in
New York.
He's in Manhattan, and it's deserted. Yeah,
it's deserted.
It's pretty cool. Like back, I like that. I was like, oh, that's effective.
It looks cool, and it's a creepy, easy effect to do. He turns back to the lady he was speaking to, and she's suddenly gone. There's no one there, and he just kind of walks the streets by himself. He goes up. He goes up to the penthouse to the lair with the crazy William Blake, you know, morphing sculpture or whatever, and he knows he's the devil at this point.
But does he? Does he know he's the devil?
They do the whole thing where he's like, "Well, I've had many names."
Yeah, that's what. Well, he find. I don't know if he knows at this point. He
suspects.
The devil. Yeah, he suspects.
I mean, New York is empty, man. It's suddenly I Am Legend out there. Creepy shit's going on, and he's the source of it. It's pretty clear.
If you were, sure.
If you were in his shoes, you'd be like, are you the devil?
I don't know if I would have thought he is Satan. I may have thought something is up, like there's something supernatural going on here. I don't know if I would have made necessarily the jump.
Well, and also, we should point out, like he's also seen moments of like face morphing a little bit too, like weird things in the corners and shit, where he does a double take. Like
he had sex with his wife, who turned into one of the demons or whatever, you know.
And he gets into it. Like he's very. Yeah. We didn't mention this character. There's a character.
His sister.
And we find out it's his sister. So basically, long story short, years back, his mom, you know, Dust Bowl, Mom Joad character, went to New York, had sex with this guy, like a waiter, I think she says, or something.
Yeah, a waiter.
A waiter, and then she never sees him again, but she knows he's like the devil, essentially. And it's revealed that Al Pacino is Keanu Reeves' father, and that this other woman in this law firm is actually Keanu Reeves' like half-sister.
Right.
With the devil, basically.
So Keanu Reeves is the son of the devil.
I remember there being like a weird ancestral thing that this movie takes at the end. And like Keanu Reeves says at one point, like he looks at his sister like, I wanted you the moment I saw you. And when he has that weird sex scene with Charlize Theron when they're like, let's have a baby, he starts like she basically morphs into this woman. And he starts to get more aggressive with his sex. And at one moment, we should point this out. You mentioned movie tropes, floor sex. Does anybody have floor sex in real life and find it comfortable? No. Like, if you do it for like a second, and then you're like, let's go to a bed or
they're
a
on
couch.
They're on hardwood floors, too.
They're on hardwood floors.
They're not even on a rug on the hardwood floor.
No. Just flat out the hardwood floor. I'm like, that's evil sex. Hardwood sex is evil sex. And he starts like sucking on her toes and like aggressively, like, you know, thrusting and stuff. And Charlize Theron's like, what are you doing? Where are you?
I'm here.
No, you're not. You're sleeping with your devil sister, aren't you?
Yeah.
But it's revealed that she's a sister and his half-sister, and they basically go through this whole song and dance of just like, yeah, I'm the devil, but come on. Like, God sucks, am I right?
It's a pretty good monologue from Pacino. It's, like, pretty lengthy. It's a lot of chewing the scenery here. Like, I feel like this is, like, 20 minutes of basically Pacino.
It's extended.
A bunch of long Pacino monologues.
Just like, and this is when it pays to have a giant lair, because you could just walk around in circles and monologue. Mm-hmm. You can go back and forth in front of your evil fireplace, your evil sculpture, you know, like your half sister can like derobe and be all sexy and naked and stuff.
Yeah. He's basically, this is like the, like, God is an absentee landlord. Like, yeah. At least I'm
a humanist.
I'm in it. I love humans. Like, and he's like, the 20th century, that was all me, baby.
Better to reign in hell than serve in heaven. Is that it?
Why not? I'm here on the ground with my nose in it since the whole thing began. I've nurtured every sensation man has been inspired to have. I cared about what he wanted, and I never judged him. Why? Because I never rejected him in spite of all his imperfections. I'm a fan of man. I'm a humanist. Maybe the last humanist. Who? In their right mind, Kevin, could possibly deny the 20th century was entirely mine. All of it, Kevin! All of it. Mine. I'm peeking, Kevin.
Yeah, and basically, he's at this. Eventually, it turns to the point where he's like, "What do you want? I'll give you whatever you want." It's like, "Oh, you like winning cases? I'll give you more cases to win, and they'll feel good."
He was like, "You know the feeling you get when you take the first bump of coke? What if you had that on tap all the time?
You can have all the floor sex you want.
The finest hardwood." Granite, basically, marble.
You walk into a sub store, you always walking in with the 10th hole punched.
It's BOGO every day with the devil.
But it's kind of funny, like, I don't really feel at any moment that Keanu Reeves is going to do it. Like, he starts making out with his sister, but it's like, I feel like at no point is he just like, I don't feel really that he's genuinely tempted to do it. Like, it seems as if he goes in there knowing,
I kind of
like,
did. I kind of did. Especially because really? The whole movie we've seen him, but like, when presented with temptation, he's like, yeah, I'll take the temptation.
Well, yeah, he's tempted, but weirdly not in this scene. At least I didn't feel it. Because he has like this smirk the whole way. Like, his right. goal is to like, I want to get one over on the devil. Like, it
yeah,
seems
I
like
guess
he's
that's
going
true.
In,
I guess what I'm saying is like, eventually what he does, I wasn't expecting that.
Oh, okay. He blows his head off.
Yeah. Well, because basically, like, the devil's like, all right, so you're my son, you're my daughter, you guys need to have sex so you can have the Antichrist.
I love how they put that, too. It's like, what, the Antichrist? And he's like, whatever.
You want a child?
I want a family.
The Antichrist.
Whatever.
Yeah, they're basically like, you need to have a kid that's going to, like, run everything. And, yeah. And Keanu's like, the Antichrist? And, yeah, Pacino's like, yeah, whatever.
It reminds me of what you had said. I can't remember what episode it was. Maybe it was one of the Shocktober episodes we did. But it's like, and Ryan had a problem where they're like, it feels weird that they say vampire. Or, you know, it was
right,
interview with the
right.
vampire.
I know what you're talking about, yeah.
This is sort of a thing here. This is a Ryan note where he's like, do they have to say Antichrist? Can't they just, like, allude to it?
Yeah. Pacino's like,
whatever. Ryan's not here to defend himself, by the way, but.
Whatever.
Ryan went jogging for the day. I sent some demon disappearing monsters out to him, teach him a lesson, beat him with some bats and stuff, you know, the works. We didn't mention that. What's his name? Jason Jones or Jeremy Jones is in this movie. The guy from Beetlejuice and
Jeffrey Ferris Jones. Bueller's. Isn't this Jeffrey the guy Jones. Who was like arrested with like child porn or something?
Yeah, yeah. He plays like one of the partners.
Like the
at
actual
this law
the
firm.
Actor was not the
the actor was. Yeah.
Yes. He was
one of the partners.
I want to make sure I had that
firm.
Right before I said that about him.
Eventually, he gets taken down because he's getting replaced, and he starts getting.
There's
pissed
one of
at Keanu.
My one of my favorite scenes in this movie is with his character. It's like Keanu Reeves. It's just one of the I forget what exactly is going on. It kind of doesn't matter. Like it's one of the cases Keanu's working on, and he has to go to the office late at night, kind of randomly, mm-hmm. and he's expecting to be the only one in the office, and he walks in and there's a big operation going on with Jeffrey Jones's like department where they're just yeah. all shredding documents, like furiously shredding.
Yeah.
It's like one of the kind of things that I imagine goes on in like the Trump White House or whatever, like releasing like the you know the files or whatever, like, okay, before yeah. we do, like, let's just
just yeah
frantically
just
shredding
running stuff in shredders.
It's a, you know, yeah, classic, like, I love that you don't know it, you never know exactly what was going on there too, like
just
it's,
evil shit.
Yes, it's just like yeah. an indicator of like, this doesn't, yeah, like imagine if you were just at work and you like went in one on an off day and you saw that happening, you'd just be like, what? What's going
I would
on
start
here,
looking
guys?
For another job immediately.
Right. It's like this can't
isn't
be good.
Right. But yeah, he basically at a certain point, like Al Pacino makes him partner, and he basically removes this guy, Jeremy Jones, right? Jeremy Jones?
Jeffrey Jones.
Jeffrey Jones. He removes Jeffrey Jones, and Jeffrey Jones is out jogging. He runs into Keanu Reeves. He's like,
I don't think he even removes him. I think it's just that he's made partner, and now Jeffrey Jones is worried he's going to, like...
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And then he starts running, and then he gets killed by invisible joggers.
Well, because Jeffrey Jones is like, I'm going to rat... I'm thinking about ratting everyone out to the Justice Department.
Yeah, yeah.
Weaver at the Justice Department.
Yeah.
You know what I thought? I thought they were going with the whole Weaver at the Justice Department angle who's alluded to, and he does show up. They don't, but I thought it would have been kind of cool if, like, because the way they're, like, Justice Department kind of vague about that.
Oh,
I was hoping he would be like an angel. Like, okay. Like that would be like the angle or something, you know.
But well, no, that
but he's clearly angel, not.
Weaver dies immediately. He gets run over by a cab.
Yeah. I mean, unless he's like a weak ass angel or like, I don't know, maybe.
But anyway, yeah. So just jump back to the ending. Like, it's a moment where he's like, "Oh yeah, you're gonna have sex with your sister. This is great. Welcome to 21st century, the millennium." And then Keanu pulls out the gun, shoots himself, and it's a pretty gory.
But
effect.
He's like free will.
Yeah, he blows his eye. He puts the gun to his head. He blows his head off, and like
it is
crazy shit starts happening. Like the William Blake, there was a cool moment here where like the William Blake like sculptures were like turning real and like turning their heads and stuff.
It's very evocative of like hell reaching out, you know, like tortured souls, like aah!
Yeah. And then he blows his head off, and then fire erupts, and Pacino goes full bore eating the scenery, like no.
It's a great no. It's a great like scream.
And then everything kind of and we're back into Keanu's eyeball. He's looking in the mirror and we're back at the beginning of the movie. He's in Gainesville again. He's in the bathroom and he's at that crossroads where he's like, defend this child molester or whatever. He goes in there and basically just says, "Your Honor, I cannot defend this man. He was just touching himself a minute ago." You know?
Well, he doesn't say that. He doesn't sell out his clients. He just says, like, I can't defend
this guy. And basically, like, I guess he's under threat of being disbarred, right? Because he took this guy on.
I mean, I don't know how this would work, honestly. Like, I'm honestly curious how this would... Like, the fact you recuse... You can recuse yourself or, like, try
to... after you accept the client, though?
I'm not sure. I mean, I think you... I think... So
you could.
I think there might be like a pretty big concern about doing it in the middle of the trial. But I bet.
I bet
if it like
happened,
if the bar would investigate it and be like, okay, so why did this happen? Like, well, I was defending him on this like molestation trial, and he started touching himself during the trial. I feel like the bar would be pretty sympathetic to that. Mm. Like, yeah, that's pretty egregious. You know, maybe arguably. Another, he committed a crime in that courtroom by touching himself in front of like everybody. You can't do that. Like, so I think he's going to be fine.
He'll be fine. Well, his big sin, as we find out,
vanity.
Yeah. They're walking down the stairs. I love this ending. And he's basically just like, well, I might get you disbarred, whatever. And then the guy, the reporter from the beginning of the movie, is just like, come on, give me the story. Lawyer gets crisis of conscience. This is great stuff. And he's like, all right, fine. I'll give you the exclusive. You know, the fame, basically, that could come from
right.
This.
Right. The reporter's kind of like, you're going to be on the papers. You're going to be known far and wide. We're talking book deals,
honest
movie
lawyer.
Deals. Which is kind of weird. I don't think that makes for a very good book deal. Like... I was representing
Oprah,
a child molester,
an
and he was
maybe.
So gross, I dropped him. Like that's.
But anyway, he basically suggests, like, yeah, okay, I'll get some fame from this, and then immediately this guy morphs into Al Pacino. He spikes the camera. He's like, ah, ha, ha.
Vanity, definitely my favorite sin.
Looks to the camera like, vanity, I told you it was my favorite.
And then we get Rolling Stones painted black, and then we're out.
How many? Yeah, we have to get a Rolling Stone. Why do you think we didn't get Sympathy for the Devil? Is that because Interview with the Vampire has already used it?
Oh, yeah, and that was only a few years before this.
Right. Do you think they're like, we can't get Sympathy for the Devil, let's get the other creepy Rolling Stones song?
I suppose these were both Warner Brothers movies.
Yeah.
But anywho, well, that's Devil's Advocate.
I want anyone out there recut this with Sympathy for the Devil.
I don't know. I kind of paint it black. Like the beat of it works well, I think, at the end.
I
like,
think
it
Paint It Black is a creepier sounding song than Sympathy for the Devil. Yeah. But the lyrics, Sympathy for the Devil, come on.
The lyrics are better. Yeah. They seem better. But the sound of it, the beat, I think it's a good beat to go
wah,
out
wah,
on.
So. Wah, 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 wah,
exactly. Yeah.
Sympathy for the Devil almost like has like an opening vibe. Like you open the movie with something like that.
Yes, exactly. There's a lead up to it, whereas Painted Black just boom, bum, 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 you know. So how long had it been since you've seen this last?
Well, I don't know if I've ever seen the whole, you know, the non-TNT version, but probably, like, the last time I saw it was probably on a CRT TV, you know, like, so.
Same.
Probably 20 years, you know.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I mean, yeah, probably when I was a teenager on TNT. So, yeah, something like 20 years.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it'd been a while for me, too. But, yeah, since TNT. Maybe we had a flat screen, but it was like an early model flat screen.
Right. LCD.
LCD, yeah. Not even plasma.
Not even plasma, yeah. Plasma.
But, you know, I like this movie. Like, it's pulpy. It's
me too.
Goofy.
I think it was fun. I think it was like it's a fun movie.
Yeah, and honestly, we've said before that it's like it's kind of long. It's almost 2.5 hours, but it flows, man.
It feels like the pace of. I could see this being a book. Like you can imagine each of these cases being like kind of distinct little
like parts
mini, kind of mini arcs or whatever.
Yeah.
I think it's like it works as like a weekend movie. Like it is long, but like this would be a good like Sunday afternoon movie or something.
Agreed.
You know, like
it made me want to read the book. I mean, I didn't realize initially that it was based on a book.
I bet the book is. I wouldn't be surprised if this situation where the book has more like supernatural
crazy stuff.
But yeah, it's probably just you know it's hard to film that kind of stuff. So I am curious about the book, and I'm curious like how different the book is from this movie.
Yeah, but I would recommend this honestly. I think this was a good beginning to our first theme month of 2026. Oops, all themes. Satanuary. I think this was a strong start. It's a strong start when you have Pacino.
It's already like, such a better start than more promising start than we got with Jesusuary. Do you remember what the first Jesus movie we saw was for Jesusuary?
It was Passion of the Christ, I think.
That was what we started with?
I think that's what we started with.
Passion of the Christ, I think, it's up there for worst movies we've seen on this
I agree.
Show.
It was honestly a loathsome experience.
It's that in Cutthroat Island might be the...
Right now, there are flames erupting behind Jana. She goes,
I know. I'm sorry to the listeners out there.
I think this is a strong start. It's Pacino going off. It's eating the scenery. It's fun. And despite its length, it's a breezy movie. I think pretty breezy. There's cool stuff going on. It's pulpy. I would recommend this.
Yeah, same. It's not like the best movie in the world.
It has
some unevenness, and there are some like some things that it's easy to be squirmish about, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like it does go into some like seedy places, and you know the start of the movie is a little rough. Like it's a little more intense than the rest of the movie is, I think. Like if you can get through the beginning, it's gonna be more fun.
Well, because it's almost like a more real type, because the other stuff,
it's more grounded. It's played
exactly.
It's played straight, and it's like pretty harrowing to see like the young girl like crying on the stand got me. Like I was like, Jesus, I feel really bad for
this guy, literally like with his hand down his pants.
Yeah,
right now.
It's like, oh, what is this? But if you can get past that, the rest of the movie is a lot more like, but you know, cut to like Charlize Theron like yellow, green, yellow, green, yellow, green.
Yeah. Oh, I can't do this. Well, it's fitting that we mentioned the millennium earlier, because when we return, the next episode of Satanuary, it'll be the year 2000, as we discuss the Brendan Fraser, Elizabeth Hurley devil classic comedy, Bedazzled.
What? I have heard the name of this movie. I'm aware of this movie. I never saw it. Not in a million years would I have guessed it had to do with the devil. So,
oh, really? You didn't know?
I don't know anything about the movie. I just know it's like a movie. I think I've maybe seen a poster.
You must not have ever seen the trailer for this at the time. I vaguely remember the trailer for this movie. You know, honestly, because this The Mummy came out in 99, Bedazzled came out the year later, and I feel like I vaguely remember seeing trailers for this movie around that time.
Is this the movie that like snipped Brendan Fraser's career short?
No.
Okay.
He had The Mummy Returns a couple years later,
okay.
And that was a big
okay.
hit. So,
okay.
No.
All right. Well, I'm excited to watch it.
All right. Well,
this was a good start. This was a good start to Satanuary. I like that we did get a lot of Satan by the end of this movie. We really do go full Satan, which was good.
It's better to pod with Satan than, I don't know, see the Passion with Christ. I don't know.
We got a few episodes to workshop that.
All right, until next time, burn in hell, everybody.
Wait. Should we rate, like, on a scale of, like, 1 to 5, how devilish these movies are? Like, how devil-y it is?
How evil they are?
Right. I mean, I think I would give this a 4 on the evil scale.
Out of 5?
4 out of 5, yeah.
Okay, if we're going out of 5. Yeah, I would, I don't know. I might have to go 5. Like, he is, like, as you said, he gets very evil. He does evil things. In terms of, like, his power, he shows his power full bore.
Right. There is an implication of, like, worldwide evil happening.
And doing it for all time. So I'm going to give it a 5 on the evil scale, the devil scale. We get full devil.
I mean, strong for both of us. These are strong start. All right. All right, you can end the episode now. Sorry.
How evil Elizabeth Hurley gets. But until next time, folks, we got to go paint it black. We'll see you later. A line of cars and they're all painted black. Flowers and my love hope never to come back.
Where's the check?
What?
Wait, go say Gaia go. They say him say Gaia go. Gaia, go son tai Gaia. Gaia go da.
Oh, you go Gaia, you hang go ya.
Gaia go do, go do.
Gaia.
There's a chicken. Plays tic-tac-toe, never loses. He's famous.
Him go sen sa.
Never loses like you.
Tic-tac-toe.
Come on, I'm going to show you the fastest way uptown. Learn the subways, Kevin. Use them. Stay in the trenches.